from our UUA president, Reverend Susan Frederick Gray. Over this past year, I have named that this is no time for casual faith and no time to go it alone. In the coming year, I will be focused on mission, because mission is where these two things meet. The opposite of casual faith is a deep sense of purpose that recognizes how much of our faith matters. And when we are called by bold mission, we realize that we can't do it alone. Could there be a powerful and simple anchor for Unitarian Universalists? A clear articulation of our calling in this time? I'm reminded of a t-shirt I saw at General Assembly a few years ago. It read simply, "Love the hell out of this world." Our Universalist ancestors didn't believe in hell, except for the ones that we create here in life. What would it mean to show up in the places where hell, where suffering and violence and persecution and inhumanity prevail, and to bring an active, powerful form of love that affirms dignity, liberation, and peace? It would mean leaving the confines of privilege to show up in solidarity, engaging and being in the struggle with those who are most directly impacted by injustice. It means siding with the national prisoner strike, with refugees and children criminalized and jailed. It means ending police violence. It means showing up against anti-Muslim and anti-Semitic policies and rhetoric. And it means showing up with our sisters in the streets and in the voting booths to recognize the dignity and integrity of women's lives, bodies, and choices. Answering this deeper call of our theology and mission is the quality that ensures that our congregations and communities are not mere social clubs, but real agents of moral and spiritual change. If we are not also acting fearlessly for human dignity, compassion, justice, and peace, then we are failing to live our mission. Love the hell out of this world. That says it pretty well about how we're called theologically and faithfully to be in the world. Imagine what might be unleashed or transformed if each of us in our congregations asked, how are we loving the hell out of this world? How does this mission call us to rethink the ways that we've been living, investing, and working for our values in the world?
I finally get universalism. Right now, February 9th, 2020, I finally get it. I've always talked appreciatively about universalism and its message that everyone is loved. How radical, historically, that notion was. In a time when preachers spoke more about damnation than love, universalism said that, of course, God loves you. Of course you're going to heaven. Of course you're of worth, of value, worthy of love. A heretical message, a courageous message, but it always seemed a bit quaint by our learned, worldly, wise standards today. And then this historical moment comes along, and I finally get it. More accurately, I finally feel universalism's saving message in all its radical form. Because I recognize how hard love can be. And it can be not just hard, but take real bravery, courage of character, especially when times are difficult and divisive. I was speaking with a family member this week, and we were expressing our astonishment about how some members of our families who had taught us the values that we hold so dear, we're so different now. We were wondering what had happened to those people we used to know who shaped our character. These were strong Christians dedicated to the concept of radical hospitality and caring for one another, now okay with things like separation of children from their parents at the border, or okay with leadership that exerts its power in non-democratic forms, okay with a whole sordid list of things I don't think I need to tell you about because you know. What do we do? I asked this family member, and she said, well, you surely have a sermon about this, right? And I thought, well, I guess I know what I'm writing this week. Because the truth of it is, I have been struggling to love those people who I hold so dear. As we approach Valentine's Day this week, I certainly planned on talking about universalism, that often ignored sibling in our Unitarian Universalist name. I've always been attracted to universalism's spirit of inclusivity. Its historical context, however, seemed a long way off, a prescription against Calvinist religion in a time long before we had ready access to education and the internet. But here I am, February 9th, 2020, struggling with how to love. Not just how to love strangers, but sometimes my own family. And I wonder, at the bottom of this, I think my greatest fear is probably, do I have enough love within me to do that? And at the same time, honor my own sense of right and wrong, my own moral compass. It's easy enough to despise people that we only see on the news or on our phone screens, internet screens, but it's harder to let go of those connections to people who made us who we are. Whether it's our parents, our grandparents, our children, our grandchildren, our close friends, all those relationships have formed the characters of the people in this room, whether we're 29 or 92. And it hurts when we see those people adopting viewpoints that are repugnant to us. But the universal side of our faith tradition acknowledges that we are all still worthy of love, no matter what we may have done, whatever belief we may hold. And for me, enacting my faith as a human being in the real world, because that's really what I'm interested in, that message becomes that we are called to love one another. And how do I do that? Am I brave? Am I capable enough to love across differences? And bravery is definitely required, because if we believe we can't change those people, then it takes courage to love them and then sit in that uncertain place that that positions us in. Part of how we begin to think about courageous love comes down to what we heard in our Time for All Ages story this morning about Malala. Malala won the Nobel Peace Prize through her acts of courageous love in Pakistan as an activist for the education of women and children. She had every reason to hate or give in to the mindset of the culture that surrounded her, but instead she lifted her voice out of a sense of love for greater humanity. But I think courageous love isn't just about activism. We're not all going to win the Nobel Peace Prize. I think simple kindness can be courageous. I teased you a little bit last week and said I'd tell you the story of my first kiss, but I didn't get around to it. We had other things to talk about. So, Lawrence, you may want to cover your ears. I'm going to tell that story this week in honor of Valentine's Day. It was a work trip, church work trip that I was on when I was about 13. And we had gone to this facility outside of St. Louis, dedicated to making a safe place for those with intellectual disabilities to live in, to socialize, to work. Woodhaven was the name. It was a sprawling campus, and the people who live there represent a spectrum of disabilities. Tommy was a boy with Down syndrome, and upon the arrival of our group of 10 teenagers, he lit up at the sight of us. He was one of the younger people at Woodhaven, And so he was thrilled to be able to socialize with new friends around his own age. He followed us around as we helped out with workshops, and he had meals with us. Away from our parents for a week, our jokes and laughter were more plentiful than usual, to say the least. But Tommy seemed to enjoy the high spirits. One day, as we waited in line for lunch, Tommy turned to me, smiled, took his hands, put them on either side of my head, grabbed me, and planted a great, big, lingering kiss on my lips. I was stunned. You see, and this is where we acknowledge the complexity of human beings. We are often more than one label, like Down syndrome can explain. And I had picked up that week that Tommy was probably gay. It takes one to know one, right? And I knew that this kiss from Tommy wasn't just a friendly kiss. He meant it. And it felt like in that lunch line with all those other teenagers from my church watching me that Tommy had exposed me in that moment. And remember, this was in a time when even just accidentally brushing the hand of another guy got ugly labels thrust upon you. And I waited. I waited for laughter and jeers. I thought, I'll never live this down. I had visions of moving to another town, changing schools, the whole deal. But there wasn't any of that. Tommy, one of the girls said gently, it's a good idea to ask before you do that. Tommy nodded agreeably. I'm sorry, he said. It's okay, I croaked out. And that was that. Nobody ever mentioned it again. I've never told that story to anyone all these years. Tommy continued to follow us that week, and everyone was always very kind to him. You know, in a lot of ways, that particular moment in time was the height of casually explicit homophobic culture. The common insult was to call someone gay, and anything that someone did that might, on even the remotest level, reflect upon them as gay was something to be publicly called out and mocked. And so in that sense, it took courage for those teenagers to lift up rather than knock down. Love is courageous when it goes against the voices of the larger culture and affirms what is right, what is kind, even. Years later, I'm talking decades later, I reached out to that facility and the director remembered our group. Tommy still asked when all of you nice kids are coming back, she said. Never mind that we aren't kids anymore. That group of teens had left a positive impression upon Tommy. That was a small act of courageous love, and it stayed with me because it showed kindness to both me and Tommy. And we see those acts all around us if we choose to look. Someone willing to speak out, even ever so gently, against an injustice. To speak up for someone who is marginalized, or even to just be kind. Kindness is courageous in our current culture. We haven't seen our leadership modeling much of that, have we? Universalism says we do these things not because we'll go to hell if we don't. We do these things because our own moral compass is a better guide than any fear-based belief in hell and damnation. That's a scary thought, though, for some people. Even still, in 2020, I've shared this story before, but I think it bears repeating. A few summers ago, I drove from Chicago to Indianapolis to visit some family members. And if you've ever taken that trip, there's not much to look at along the way, just, you know, trees and flat land. And so you get used to reading road signs, you know, fried chicken restaurants and kind of seedy-looking motels and things like that. And then as we're driving along, I see this sign. So I did a little internet search later and discovered that not only was there a sign like this in Indiana, but apparently all the surrounding states, Ohio, Kentucky, and so on, these signs were everywhere. And what I realized was that there had been some very well-publicized instances recently of mega church pastors who had started to preach a universalist message. They had started to preach that everyone was worthy of love, everyone was essentially saved, that all religious impulses were paths to the same God, and so on. These were, you know, people who were moving away from a much more conservative theology and getting a lot of attention for it. And I think the presence of these signs in this particular part of the country indicated that some people were very nervous about the idea that maybe hell didn't exist, according to some of these preachers. The argument against universalism pretty much remains the same as it did back in the 1800s. Without the fear of hell and damnation, what's to keep people from doing wrong? Universalism has always had an answer for that. We do good and stop ourselves from doing bad because we are better human beings, happier within ourselves, more at peace, more capable of being creative, generative, more aligned with any conception of the benevolent divine when we do good. We are simply better when we do good, and that is reward enough. Also, this puts the moral compass back into our hands instead of in God's hands. This is both sobering and empowering. Universalism says you are responsible for your internal life. You can live aligned with love or not. You and you alone will ultimately be the one who thrives or suffers internally based upon your choices. And can you imagine, for a time in the mid-1800s, universalism was the fastest growing and, briefly, the largest Christian denomination in the United States. What happened? In case you didn't know, we're not the largest anymore. I hope that's not a shock, right? I think part of the problem has been our collective understanding of just what love is. The English language utilizes just one word for love, while the Greeks had three. Eros referred to the most popular idea nowadays, romantic love, what we think of with Valentine's Day. Philia described the way we might love and like our friends. But agape is different. It is a courageous kind of love. Agape is generative, creative, an understanding of others, and an active push toward goodwill for all. And when we are able to channel this kind of larger love, we lose the emphasis on loving people because they are likable. Because, let's face it, sometimes they're not. Sometimes any of us, we're not likable. But instead, we love others because of their connection to all humanity. Agape is the kind of love that informed our universalist tradition, the idea that grace connects us all, even the difficult people. And in the courageous love this faith tradition calls us to engage in, we don't simply acknowledge this grace, we become its active agents in the world. But what about those who make other choices? Who move away from this connected love to a place of selfishness. Now, universalism says there is no hell except the one that we create here on earth. In this sense, universalism says there is something even worse than being an immigrant child separated from your parents. While that is certainly its own kind of hell, it's not the hell of those children's making. The real hell, according to universalism, is for the person who makes the decision that this separation is okay. For the person who condones sexual violence against women. For the person who perpetuates systems that keep people in poverty and so on. Those people are in hell right here on earth. Now, I know it may not look like hell, what we think of as hell. We don't usually think of hell as populated with Baroque mansions and yachts and that sort of thing. And we're not also necessarily talking about conscious suffering here. But those who are not aligned with love suffer in their own way, because even if we are a billionaire and appear to have it all, something is off when we are not connected to that universal love. Something rots inside of us. And I'll tell you, when I think of people being in that state, being disconnected from that sense of larger love, even if that's of their own making, it is easier for me to have compassion for them. It's easier for me to, and I don't say this lightly, easier for me to love them courageously. Courageous love, or to use another Greek word, eudaimonia, is all about seeking out the highest good, human good, the flourishing of all of life in wholeness and health. UU minister Gretchen Haley says, courageous love lives in the place where love of self, love of other, and love of the whole world come together into a love for all. This brings me back again to my own fear. Maybe I don't have enough capacity to love quite this much. Maybe universalism asks of me more than I can give. But when I take a moment, when I breathe, when I really try and align myself with the best of what I can be, I know, and I mean I know on a cellular level, that I do have the capacity for infinite love. And I know each and every one of you do as well. That no matter what gets in the way of us accessing that love sometimes, no matter what frustrations or old stories or distractions or news or whatever it is that gets in our way, we actually have the ability to love beyond our own understanding. And this love is abiding. It endures. It's within you, it's within me, and it is activated. It comes alive, it gains strength, it has the power to transform. When we are truly brave and share it wholeheartedly with the world.